You're listening to the Jason Greger Show podcast, brought to you by Lakewood Chev. Celebrate Canada's 150th and treat yourself to a brand new Silverado. 20% off MSRP cash credit on select vehicles right now at Lakewood Chev.
Breaking news story brought to you by ProAmSports.ca. Get all your NFL apparel, tees, headwear, and signed and unsigned memorabilia today at ProAmSports.ca. The breaking news happened over the weekend, but the NBA is investigating the Lakers for tampering. Joining us now is an excellent NBA reporter for TSN Radio, as well as TSN.ca, Josh Lewenberg joins us. Josh, I'm in Edmonton, kind of the furthest away from an NBA franchise one could get. And I think even I knew Paul George wanted to play for the Lakers. The Pacers are now asking the NBA to step in on this. What did you make of this entire situation, and do the Pacers have a case?
Yeah, that's a good point, Mark. I'm not sure how much tampering will be needed to get Paul George to L.A. That seems like his preferred destination and has seemed that way for a while now. But, I mean, let's face it. There's probably tampering going on in the NBA every day. Today, yesterday, tomorrow, every day, people are talking. And there's a fine line between that legal conversation that guys are allowed to have with each other and what is considered tampering. The NBA is a very tight-knit league. Owners talk, executives talk, and we know players talk. So the question is, when does tampering occur? Of course, Bob Myers won executive of the year this past season, in large part for his recruitment of Kevin Durant to Golden State. But it sounds like that recruitment began months before that. Draymond Green, we know, sent that text to Durant after they lost in the finals in whatever that would have been, early June, mid-June. And it could have started long before that with guys talking at All-Star break or what have you. So it's a loosely interpreted rule that isn't so much don't tamper. It's more like don't get caught tampering. So at this point, it's about what you can actually prove. And if the NBA and if the Pacers do indeed have a case against the Lakers, if they have proved that at some point some amount of tampering took place, it'll be interesting to see what, if anything, they do, how strict the punishment is, if there is one. Are we talking a fine? Is there enough grounds to maybe slap them with one fewer or a couple fewer draft picks in the future? That's something that the NBA has done in the past, not specifically with tampering, but situations where there's been improprieties with signings. I remember there was an incident with Joe Smith, I believe it was, in Minnesota back a couple decades ago. But, I mean, this is something to keep an eye on. I'm not sure how much smoke there is, if there's a fire to all this smoke and all these rumblings, but hey, it's the dog days of the summer, so we need something to talk about.
We're joined by Josh Lewenberg from TSN 1050. You can follow him on Twitter at JLew1050. And one example I pointed to right off the top of the show is the Houston Rockets when they acquired Chris Paul. Like, you're right, tampering is all over the NBA. How did the Rockets know Chris Paul is willing to go to Houston? I don't know. They magically were able to get that trade in place. I understand why these rules are here, but do you think we need them in the NBA?
I think you need that unwritten rule, if anything else, to keep folks in line. But it's one of those things that's very difficult to police. How can you stop people from having conversations as friends behind closed doors? Because, again, these players are very close, probably closer than ever. It's always been a very tight-knit league. But now in this age of social media where there isn't that competitive spirit. I don't want to say competitive spirit, but certainly not the same level of competitive spirit that there was when Jordan was going up against the likes of Karl Malone. Those guys probably weren't hanging out in the summer and riding banana boats in the same way LeBron James, Carmelo Anthony, Chris Paul, and those guys are. Everyone is friends with one another, and as a result of that, there's going to be some amount of tampering. I think where the league is really concerned about tampering is when it goes beyond player-to-player conversation, when it's those guys in the front office or even guys affiliated with the front office. Remember, Drake doesn't really have an official position here in Toronto. He's the global ambassador, but there's been some question as to what that actually means and if he's on the payroll. But the NBA has been very cautious about his interaction with players over the last few years and actually find the Raptors back probably around 3 or 4 years ago when Drake on stage made some comment about how Kevin Durant should come to Toronto at his OVO Fest. So, I mean, it's one of those things that is very tough, I think, for the NBA to be consistent with, both in terms of their penalty, their punishment, and also what constitutes tampering. But it's always going to be something that I think the NBA keeps a close eye on, especially as players seem to get closer and closer over the years.
Joined by Josh Leuenberg, and it's funny you do mention Drake. He appeared on LeBron James's Instagram page last night. They were hanging out, so who knows what exactly going
tampering.
On.
Tampering.
Yes, exactly what's going on behind closed doors. Keeping with the Toronto Raptors, what'd you make of their offseason, Josh? Do they have enough to keep up with the Boston Celtics in that division, or is that Boston's division to lose?
I think right now it's Boston's division to lose, and that's only fair. I was saying the same thing about the Raptors a year ago as the Celtics were retooling, but at that point, the Raptors were coming off an appearance in the conference finals. They were, at that point, the second-best team. Boston had to prove their worth, and to their credit, they did. So now it's their spot to lose, with Cleveland at the moment still at the top of that hierarchy. It's going to be an interesting year, Mark, I think, because the perception about the Raptors from the Raptors fans as well as league-wide, it seems to be that they've taken a bit of a step back here. But I'm not sure that that's necessarily the case, and I say that for two reasons. First of all, let's look at the top of the roster. The core of this team is Lowry, DeRozan, Ibaka. That's a trio that folks were really excited about when the Raptors pulled off that trade for Ibaka at the trade deadline last year. At the time, I was among many who were of the belief that this is the best trio that the Raptors organization has ever had at one time. And we haven't seen what they're capable of. Lowry went down with a wrist injury almost immediately after the Raptors made that trade. The three guys, Lowry, DeRozan, Ibaka, played three total games together before the playoffs. And, of course, in the playoffs, Lowry was never fully healthy. Ibaka hurt his ankle in the first round as well. So if those three come together, as a lot of people thought that they could have a few months ago, now that they have a full training camp and presumably a full season together, I think that that's a potentially means of improvement internally for the Raptors. And then the second thing I'll point out is the young guys here that they're turning to. A lot of people are down on the fact that the Raptors have lost a big chunk of that secondary cast, the supporting players that they've had over the last few years, Patrick Patterson, of course, Damari Carroll, Corey Joseph, and PJ Tucker, who is now in Houston. But one thing I'll point out is those secondary guys really let them down in the playoffs last year. Patterson, Damari Carroll, those guys couldn't hit a shot to save their life. And Corey Joseph, while he stepped up in the absence of Lowry, he had an off-season last year as well, took a step back on the defensive end. So now you turn to young players, and with that comes the unknown. There's presumably some growing pains that those guys are going to need to get over as they step into new roles. DeLon Wright is the backup point guard. Norman Powell potentially stepping into the starting lineup. Siakam and Poeltl, who should be playing more. That could be a reason why the Raptors do, in fact, take a step back this year if those guys can't catch up and ultimately match the production of the players that they're going to be replacing. But I do think there's higher upside with those players. Certainly the Raptors feel that way, and if they do catch on quickly and grow in a hurry, then you're potentially looking at guys who could be better than the players that they're replacing. And if that is the case, then I do think there is room for improvement here internally with this Raptors team.
Joined by Josh Leuenberg from TSN 1050, the Raptors have their first, or 20 of their first 33 games are on the road, and you just talked about how they had an interesting offseason. How much pressure is going to be on head coach Dwayne Casey? Let's say for around Christmas time, this team is hovering around 500. Is he going to feel the pressure maybe?
Maybe a little bit. And I'm a little bit surprised that he's back this year, to be honest. Not that he doesn't deserve to be, just based on the success that he and this team have had together over the last few years. But certainly when I, like a lot of people, heard the words culture reset from Asai Ujiri after the sweep to Cleveland back in the spring, I figured that might start with the head coach. So naturally you would think that the leash will be short to begin the season. But I do think the Raptors, Ujiri in the front office, they've got a pretty good understanding here of how difficult this start is going to be. And like the last few years, the Raptors are going to be playing for May and for June. At the very least, they're going to be playing for mid-April. They're not necessarily concerned, I don't think, with what happens over the first few weeks. I mean, yeah, you want to hang in there during this tough stretch. You want to show signs of improvement, certainly from those younger players that I mentioned. But ultimately, they're striving, they're playing for the end of the season. So barring a complete disaster out of the gate, I do think Casey is safe for at least one more year. It's going to be tough. It's going to be a big challenge, as you mentioned, Mark, and that's a very good point, especially because they have those young players that are going to be growing into their new roles. They're going to be tested right out of the gate. It's going to be a trial by fire for a lot of them. But the flip side of this is you probably rather have a tough stretch out of the gate than at the end of the season. Remember, the Raptors are going on this 6-game West Coast road trip right in the first month of the season. They play their first two games here in Toronto, then they go out west. You play that stretch at some point during the season. It's always a nightmare, not just for the Raptors, but for a lot of teams out east. But I think you rather deal with it, get it out of the way early rather than playing it towards the end of the season or even mid-season when injuries start to accumulate and guys start getting tired.
We'll close on this one, Josh. Really appreciate the rundown you gave us. When training camp opens up in a couple months, Kyrie Irving, will he be a member of the Cavaliers?
I think so. I just think that the Cavs have so little incentive to move him for anything less than he's worth right now. It's not the same situation as Paul George in Indiana, where he was entering the final year of his contract. It's not even the same situation as Carmelo Anthony, who seems like he also might be moved over the next few months, in that Melo has the leverage of at least exercising his no trade clause to say where he wants to go. Certainly Kyrie has made his desire to be moved clear, but the ball is still in Cleveland's court in the sense that they can trade him wherever they want, whenever they want. And because of how young he still is, how talented he is, and how high presumably his trade value is, they've got to get quite a bit for him. Right now their asking price sounds like it's extremely high. They want a young player with star potential. They want a guy that can come in, make an impact right away, and help LeBron contend for another championship this season. And sounds like they're also probably looking for picks. They're not going to get all that, but they're going to certainly try and get as much as they possibly can. So it could take some time. And because there are players around the league who just signed contracts, for example, a guy like Jeff Teague in Minnesota, a team that might be interested in Kyrie, those guys can't be moved until December 15th. So I think we might be looking at something towards the All-Star break, the trade deadline, before a trade for Kyrie really unfolds and starts to make sense for Cleveland.
Josh, I really appreciate the run in the middle of summer. Get back to your offseason, and we'll chat as hoop season just right around the corner. Thanks, man.
All right, Mark. Talk to you soon.
Josh Lewenberg from TSN 1050.